Support for NPR podcasts comes from Acura, featuring the all-new turbocharged Acura RDX with available real-time traffic alerts. More at acura.com/RDX.
This podcast is a production of KCRW.com.
From KCRW in Santa Monica, I'm Claude Brodesser-Ackner, and this is The Business.
So you still want to do the show business, and you think that you got what it takes? I mean, you really got to rap and be all that, but prepare yourself for breaks. Check it out.
This week on The Business, what does it mean for your TV show to be on the bubble? And we're not talking about being drunk on champagne. We'll speak with the producers of Scrubs and Jericho about coming back from the brink of extinction. Get ready for the show that's always on the bubble, and this time I do mean drunk on champagne. It's The Business from NPR. On the bubble is the television term for a show that's in danger of being canceled. These are often shows that receive low audience numbers but strong critical acclaim, or shows that used to have big numbers but don't seem to be doing as well anymore. It might simply be that the show just doesn't appeal to people. But it's just as likely that it was given a difficult time slot, or got moved around like a chess piece, or didn't get the right or enough promotion. The life expectancy of a show that's on the bubble is determined by a complex and somewhat mysterious calculus. Today, we're going to try and make some sense of why a show lives or dies when it's on the bubble with two case studies, Scrubs and Jericho. NBC's offbeat doctor dramedy Scrubs first hit the airwaves in 2001.
Seeing an intern tell someone they're going to die for the first time is strange, because even though it's a horrible and sad experience, if they get through it, there's a sense of accomplishment.
Nailed it!
Hell yeah!
Good job, man. What'd you say?
Well, I just told him that there's nothing more we can do right now.
Ooh.
Scrubs was an Emmy magnet from the get-go, but the network was never really happy with the size of its audience. It's always lived under the looming specter of cancellation, but it keeps on trucking because of its loyal and demographically very desirable fan base. Scrubs was renewed for a seventh season in May. On the other hand, the post-apocalyptic drama Jericho was canceled after a single season on CBS.
We had all hoped that this was an accident, but the unfortunate truth is there was another explosion in Atlanta. I've been busy trying to contact the governor to coordinate the emergency. There is no report of anything happening in Topeka.
How are we going to get reports without television?
Or no phones?
After the cancellation, a huge group of hardcore Jericho fans lobbied the network, alerting them to the many, many people who were watching the show on their DVRs and online and not being counted in the Nielsens. As a result, Jericho got a 7-episode reprieve from the network executioner. But it's still very much a show on the bubble. In fact, a letter from CBS network chief Nina Tassler thanked the program's fans but reminded them that the show will need a much bigger audience if it's going to survive. She ended the note with, "P.S., please stop sending us nuts." Bill Lawrence is the creator and executive producer of Scrubs, and Carol Barbie is the executive producer of Jericho. Carol Barbie,
yes.
Bill Lawrence, welcome to The Business.
Hey, how you doing?
Thank you.
So how do you know you're on the bubble? Does someone like actually tell you, or do you just look at the ratings and you know right away? Bill?
Much like you can tell if somebody likes you in a romantic relationship when you go out on a date, besides the ratings, which is the obvious way, you can sense when you're dealing with executives from whatever network you're on, you know, how the tide is going for your show, you know, just in the way that they talk to you and in what they say, because they're human beings, you know, and they can pretend that there's giant enthusiasm for your show at the network, but if there's not, you know, you can tell in about 30 or 40 seconds.
Carol, how do you know? I mean, is it the sort of thing that you can just sort of like a forest creature and sensing earthquake, you can intuitively sense it being telegraphed?
Yeah, I think as showrunners, we're always a little paranoid about how the show's going to do. So you're always looking for the numbers the day after you air. But you also read it in the trades. You read it in the papers. People start saying things even before you might be willing to believe that that's true. You're like, hey, come on. We're just working it out here. But then you'll start reading that you're on the bubble and then, as Bill said, the network execs will start making suggestions and feeling a little nervous.
Well, take us to that moment. I mean, who actually picks up the phone and says, we got to talk.
I think that a lot of showrunners are occasionally unaware because you're so personally invested, you know, in the work and in trying to make things happen that you miss the signals, you know, you get buried in it.
Yeah.
I've only gotten clarity because we had a really weird situation, which was I knew that Scrubs was on the bubble at NBC, but I was also already been made aware that if NBC didn't pick up the show, that it would be on ABC. So we were on the bubble on our existing network, but not in danger of being canceled.
Mm-hmm.
And so what was really interesting was I could step back and watch this stuff, you know, exactly what Carol's talking about, when somebody, you know, it might be somebody that's a fan of your show, you know, the person that's covering it, that's invested personally because their career will do well if your show does well, you know, is saying things like, we need something that's splashy, you know, maybe, you know, we need something that grabs people. Maybe we can get, you know, a huge stunt character to come on the show.
And because, we should just to interrupt you for one brief moment. When you say stunt character, you're not talking about someone who dived through a window into a bed of flame.
Yeah,
we're talking about, like,
I mean, like, you know,
Al Pacino,
I mean,
would come on for three episodes.
George Clooney.
Right. Exactly. You know, it's funny because I personally don't feel that stuff works. But, I mean, for a while, it's like Will and Grace would be like, this week on Will and Grace, God. You know? Well, Osama bin Laden. You know, it was, I think it's because TV is essentially, they can create this self-fulfilling prophecy, which is if the network flies south on your show and stops promoting it because they don't think it's catching on, the show will gradually decline because the viewer awareness won't be out there and they'll look like they're right.
When you're on the bubble, how do you tell your cast and crew?
I was put in a great position by the Touchstone Television, you know, Mark Pedowitz, the president of that company, told me I could tell the cast and crew that if NBC didn't pick up the show, that ABC would. And so because of that, we got to rest easy.
Mm-hmm. That is a good position to be in.
Yeah, it was very cool.
Yeah, Carol, your experience was a little different, I think, right?
Yeah, our cast and crew, I have to tell you, they were on the internet more than we as the producers and the writers were because we were kind of busy, but they were like on there all the time, and so they were keenly aware of what was going on. But when we got the call, I got the call a couple of days before the official announcement at the upfronts that we were canceled. And
that must have sucked.
It was horrible. It was horrible because I tell you, the worst case scenario for me, I really thought, was that we would get moved to a different time slot.
You're a mid-season show or something like that.
Yeah, exactly. I thought they'd go, oh, you're like an after-school special. You're at 4 in the afternoon on Tuesday. But I never, never, never thought they were actually going to cancel us. So when I got that call actually saying, you're canceled, it was like a gut punch, it really was. And I have two producing partners, and I called them and said, okay, meet me at the office and let's start making the phone calls. And it was like a funeral. We were sitting here calling people and saying, no, they really canceled us. No, they really did. And the actors were upset and incredulous, and everybody in the crew, and it was like 2 days of mourning. And then the second day was when they had the upfronts and they made the announcement. That day I got on a plane that afternoon to go to North Carolina to visit my family. By the time I got to North Carolina, 5 hours later, this fan thing had really started to roll. And that made me feel better, and it made the cast feel better, but nobody ever thought that something would come of it. And so we were like, well, that's nice. And then for 5 days I'm in North Carolina, out in the middle of the country with bad cell phone reception, getting spotty ideas of what's going on. And then by the time I got back to L.A., it was in full-fledged revolt mode, and then it was fun. So we asked for the permission to shop it to other networks. They agreed, and then we also said, but what our preference would be is for you to pick us up and let us come back on as a mid-season and promote us and let us
tell the
story.
You know how luxurious it's going to be, Carol, just to do 7 in a row?
Oh, my
God. Only do 7 shows?
It's the dirty little secret, I tell you. We looked at each other the other day and said, it's probably better we were canceled, because we came back with all this, you know, support and all this goodwill behind us, and we're the little engine that could, and we're looking at 7. We're not looking at 22. And it's a long year when it's
creatively 22. It's going to be so much easier just to really do great work.
Yeah.
If you're just joining us, we're talking with Bill Lawrence, creator and executive producer of the offbeat NBC dramedy Scrubs, and Carol Barbee, executive producer of the CBS apocalyptic drama Jericho. Both shows have been in danger of cancellation, and we're talking about what it means to be on the bubble. What does the phrase on the bubble mean to you?
To me, it means that you are not standing on solid ground anymore. You're not gone, but you're not standing on solid ground. And if that bubble pops, if it goes one way or the other, you could be gone. That you're in danger of losing the enthusiasm from the network and the studio.
It means another thing, too, I think, which is it can be somewhat liberating, because when you're on the bubble, you're forced to realize on some level that you can't control You know what I mean? What's going to happen? And because of that, I found it. I finally got to a place that's like, more than anything in the world, it's actually the time to stop listening to the network and to do what you creatively would be proud of. Because, you know, it's like worrying about the weather. You know, no matter how hard you worry about what the numbers are going to be the next day, you can't physically do anything to change them.
Yeah. No, once you are on a creative role and you like where you are and you're telling the story you mean to tell and the audience is being entertained and the network feels good about what the show is, it's really about trying to find that audience through advertising and reruns and all these other platforms, and that's not our job. Our job, mine and Bill's job, is to make sure the show creatively works and to make sure that we, you know, film things and hand them in on time. But we can't. So that's why when we get phone calls from execs saying, "Oh, your numbers." Just, I can't do anything about the numbers. All I can do is do the show.
I actually tell younger writers, you know, and showrunners nowadays that the time to listen to the network is when you're doing well. Because there's three different stages. If you're a juggernaut, you know, like Lost or American Idol or whatever, that is, you know, you essentially get to say, we're doing what we want, please don't call anymore.
Mm-hmm.
And if you're doing poorly, listening to those guys and their suggestions most likely, A, isn't going to change that, and B, isn't going to change how they treat you, so you also really don't have to listen. You can just do whatever creatively makes you satisfied and will ultimately reflect well on your career. It's the middle ground when the show's doing well, and you have some of their enthusiasm, and they're saying things like, you know what, we'd love to promote it even more if you got a love interest for Zach and or for JD. That's when you listen to them because you're trying to ride that wave of getting them invested.
Yeah.
But the other two ends of the scale, I don't really pay attention much to the input.
So it's good to let them pat them on the head once in a while, let them think they're actually in control.
And also, I mean, I think so often in interviews like this, and Carol might agree, is when we're talking about the network, it sounds like they're this evil, you know.
Right.
And the truth of the matter is, man, some of the times the people calling you with ideas are people that are not only working on your show, you know, but are invested in it personally.
Yeah.
Because they, you know, as they came to know you and work on it, they like it and they're proud of it and want it to survive. And, you know, but they're living in their corporate system and trying to think of ways that they can make their bosses go, hey, let's make a commercial for Jericho that says, highlights how critically acclaimed it was, you know, and shows how proud we are of it as a network to give it a chance to, you know, to keep going and to survive. You know, so they're trying to help you. So to just be confrontational and say, you know, I don't really give a crap what you think is ultimately counterproductive. You know?
Yeah.
I'm curious, how can the network's decision to get behind the show when it is on the bubble affect the outcome, or, you know, or not?
Well, I'll tell you this. There's a, you know, it's really a double question. Because the first thing is when they say, let's save Scrubs, what are they going to do? They're going to suggest creative things that they think will make changes in the show that will make more people interested in it. I don't necessarily think that that should be their job. I don't know how it evolved to that. You know what I mean? And so then the skill set of a showrunner becomes a very strange dance, because you as a showrunner, your job isn't just to write and produce a quality television show. On some level, it's also to make the network, which is a very corporate environment, feel invested personally, feel that they're part of the creative decision making, because as a result, if they feel that, you know, they're being listened to and that they're part of the process, their investment in the quality of the show, you know, I mean, it can range from more commercials, protecting the show more, all the way to your show being picked up regardless of its numbers because of how passionate they are about its quality. You know, case in point, The Office did horrible numbers probably in other environments would not have been picked up, but Kevin Reilly championed it. He felt that they were really listening to him. He felt that it was a creative partnership, and he kept that show on the air despite its performance, and actually canceled shows that did a lot better.
Carol Barbee, let me ask you, how do personalities of your executives play into your day-to-day?
I've always found the CBS executives and the Paramount executives to be really supportive, and Nina Tausser's always loved Jericho, and David Brownfield is the head of Current, and so he's the person that I deal with on a daily basis, and he gives a lot of the creative notes, and David himself was a writer, so that's actually rare for executives, but he gets it, so I've always found him to be very kind of no-nonsense and helpful creatively. But they were so behind Jericho the whole year that I felt great support from them. And when we got to the point where our numbers had fallen off in the second half of the season after having been taken off the air for a very long break and coming back against American Idol. I think we could have survived one or the other, but not both. I never felt that they waned on us creatively. They loved what we were doing creatively. It was about how do we find that audience that is obviously still out there that we haven't maxed out, but we haven't been able to get to them yet. So.
Well, that's the question I'd like to have you answer, which is what can they do to help the show other than, you know, get me Al Pacino for three episodes?
I think they can change time slots. They can try you in a different area, you know, against different shows. They can also advertise you, promo you on other shows that perhaps that's not your audience, and they can expose you to a new audience. They can put you on after the Super Bowl. You know, there are things they can do to get some get eyeballs on your show.
And it's not just the landscape has changed so much. You have to understand too that to me, besides from the easy answer of like, hey, put you in a more protected time slot.
Yeah.
The real modern landscape of television is such that the days where you can promote a show by putting a commercial on during another show are over, because everybody has 150 channels.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? And that's not the way people watch TV anymore. I mean, my dad watches, A&E and Lifetime shows, and he's all over the map. So it's outside the box thinking, and unfortunately, the network can only pick one or two shows that they really invest their time and promotional money in a year. And if you go back and look at the way that NBC essentially launched My Name is Earl, which is they had decided that was going to be their big, I don't know if you remember, but they decided that was going to be their big new show. And, forget about commercials on TV and billboards and internet and radio, and that's essentially in this landscape what you need to launch, because you rarely come back from a poor launch.
Well, I think that's actually the story of the resurgence of Jericho, is the fact that CBS from the very beginning knew that Jericho was the kind of show that they didn't have, which was an internet-friendly show. It's a cult show. We've got those fanboys. So this was a new thing for them. So when they took us off the air for that break in the middle, they spent a lot of time and energy and money on our web presence, and they cultivated this online audience, and they did a great job of it. They did such a great job that people were watching us on the internet. We lost 2 or 3 million viewers, but they were on the internet, and they were not being advertised to on the traditional method, which is on television.
Plus, the Nielsen's hasn't caught up to that yet.
Correct.
At all.
Correct.
You know?
Well, I want to talk about all of that right now, which is that there's a quote by you, Bill, in the New York Times some time ago, saying, "quote Rather than seek out new viewers, our survival technique was to hold on to the old ones."
Well, yeah,
we weren't writing for the people who were turning on this show for the first time. That seems very counterintuitive.
No, we have two ways of surviving nowadays. Okay, I really feel there's basically two avenues you have, which is number one, is that you launch and are a giant hit. Because if you do so, we've all seen what happens. The second you're a giant hit, the network puts their machine behind you. They see dollar signs, as they should, as a corporate entity, and they put all their time and effort behind making that show bigger and making that show sustain, because it has become something that prints money. If you don't do that, because there is a show that already did do that, which is getting all their time and dollars, the odds of your show 2 years down the line suddenly being a giant hit are over, because in the modern landscape, shows don't survive that long. They're pulled quickly. They're shuffled around from time slot to time slot, and they could die a slow, painful death. We think that nowadays the only other way to survive is it's what Jericho did too. It's to become a cult show with a fan base so loyal, that the network goes, wow, with very little promotion, very little money spent on our part, the same core group of people are going to follow this show from time slot to time slot. Then as an asset to the network, you become incredibly valuable. And so for us, we said, we're not going to be a big hit. Let's take all the people that are passionate about this show and motivate them to stay with it longer than people usually stay with television shows. And that's, I think, why we're on a seventh year.
We'll be back in a moment with Bill Lawrence, creator and executive producer of the NBC dramedy Scrubs, and Carol Barbee, executive producer of the CBS apocalyptic drama Jericho. Both shows have been in danger of cancellation, and we're talking about what it means to be on the bubble. You're listening to The Business from NPR. You're listening to The Business, and I'm Claude Brodesser-Ackner. In TV terms, being on the bubble means that your show's in danger of being canceled. We're talking about two shows that have been on the bubble and lived to tell the tale, at least for now. First, there's NBC's offbeat doctor dramedy, Scrubs. It's been on the bubble for most of its run, but the critics love it, and it reaches a very desirable demographic. It's just been renewed for a seventh season. Jericho, the post-apocalyptic thriller on CBS, was canceled at the end of its first season. But after a really impressive campaign by hardcore fans, Jericho received a 7-episode reprieve from the network executioner. Bill Lawrence is the creator and executive producer of Scrubs, and Carol Barbie is the executive producer of Jericho. Carol Barbie, obviously Bill Lawrence's show was on the bubble for a lot of years beyond just this last year, year to year, for different reasons. And I guess I want to go to the issue of ownership for a moment, if we could. CBS and Paramount are the same company. They own your show,
yes,
so to speak. They produce it. In Bill's case, that is not true.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm curious to ask first you and I guess then Bill how that affects your chances for coming back.
I got to tell you, they owned us and they let us go. So until the fans told them that they weren't going to let them do that, I will say that CBS was cool with us. Paramount asked that we be able to shop the show to different networks when they let us go, and CBS agreed to let us do that, and there was interest other places, and I think that played into their decision to bring us back.
I think that ultimately, just as a precursor, Carol's show is back on because it's exceptionally well written and well produced, and people really like it. But you know, when you're like, wow, CBS, Paramount, you know, after canceling a show or taking a chance and you know, doing 7 very expensive episodes of TV, I will tell you point blank that would have been a much harder decision for them to make did they not know going in that they own the product,
yes,
and are most likely going to make the money back regardless of what happens in DVD sales and the like, you know, as the show goes on to exist, you know, past when we're all producing it. Scrubs, not a lot of people remember this, when it came out of the box, its first year was a hit, was a top 20 show. The second year they put us after Friends, and we didn't retain the audience for the first 4 or 5 episodes. And because the network ultimately stood to make no money from us in success, the Disney company, ABC, which owns 100% of our show, will make millions and millions of dollars. It was very easy for them to go, hey, you know what, let's move it out of that slot and move a series of new shows that we own into that time slot.
Mm.
And you can't blame them for it, which is the weirdest thing, because if I was running NBC, I would have made the same decision. And we found ourselves going from being a show that people are like, oh, it's going to be the next big hit, to almost overnight being a utility player where you get phone calls saying, all right, you're going to be on Thursday at 9 this week and then Tuesday at 9:30 next week and then back to Thursday at 8:30 the week after that.
Carol Barbie, let me ask you, the fan support of Jericho has played a huge part in this story of bringing the show back. Tell us about that and how you worked with the fans to help save the show and what input they might have as the show goes forward.
This was truly exactly what it was. It was like a fan revolt, and we didn't have anything to do with it in the beginning. And as time went on, we would talk to them or we would email back and forth with a couple of them. There were like 5 or 6 people who sort of took the lead and had started websites, and there's one guy who has a radio show, and they kind of call themselves the Jericho Rangers because that's our police force on Jericho. And they started talking to each other, and they really did it all, and we would just, you know, send them messages of encouragement and say thanks. We couldn't really get involved that much because I was, you know, helping negotiate with CBS and going to these other networks who were interested in us, and so I couldn't really say much, but our actors actually jumped in and started interfacing with the fans. Obviously, there's this huge fan engine out there. We need to harness that. We need to bring them in and help them, have them help us market the show. So, but we're doing certain things, like we're going to have a big fan event here on our stages, and the radio show is going to broadcast from here, and we're flying those guys out to meet us at Comic-Con so that we can all be there with the fans.
We should be clear that Comic-Con is the annual Geek Fest that happens in San Diego.
Yeah.
It's a sort of confabulation of
power nerd.
Of power, yeah, exactly.
But in terms of like creatively where the show is going, We know the story we're telling, and I never feel like you do the audience a favor by sort of writing by committee or pandering or reading the message boards and picking up on threads and saying, oh, yeah, let's do that story. It's like we set out to tell a story. We're telling that story, and we want to keep the integrity of that, and I think that's better for the fans.
There's an irony to all of this that so much of the reason that the show came back had to do with web-based campaigns.
Yes.
And sort of high-tech campaigns. And from what I understand, USA Today, I think, reported that Jericho is reportedly one of the most time-shifted shows. That is, it's taped on digital video recorders and watched, you know,
yes,
whenever
the
audience sees fit to view it. But they're also the hardest to keep track of, I would think.
Yeah.
I want to ask you about that. How does this help or not help your case when so much of your audience is this smart, clever audience that Madison Avenue wants, and yet they're almost, it's like herding cats. You can never tell where the hell they are.
You know, well, first of all, I mean, what you speak of on some level is the necessity to change, you know, the Nielsen system, you know, and I'm on a show that's not a huge hit, so it sounds like, you know, I'm going, hey, Scrubs isn't ranked in the top 10, the Nielsen's must be screwy. But I'll tell you something, too, is, you know, I created Spin City, which was in the top 20, and there's more anecdotal evidence for me, you know, that people are fans of Scrubs than there ever was on Spin City. You know, I mean, the Nielsen's exist because there's no other system. I mean, we're ultimately deciding what everybody in the country watches based on, I think at one point within the last 2 years, it was like 2,100 boxes representing,
yeah,
the entire United States of America, which to me is, you know, is a giant, you know, pile of bullpucky, you know. I mean, it doesn't equate. But one of the things that I took solace in, and one of the reasons I think Scrubs is still around, are people are starting to look at, A, we know about, they're looking at DVR numbers, but also, one of the things that helps Scrubs is they printed a study on shows that the audience pay the most attention to, and hence that the commercial people care, because afterwards people were actually able to reference, you know, what products were advertised, as,
yeah,
opposed to maybe shows that are background noise, you know. And I think that the network, the days where they just looked at the Nielsen's and said, this is what your show's doing, luckily are gone.
Carol Barbee, the network has ordered 7 more Jericho episodes. Given what Bill just said, how will they determine whether the show goes on? Is it just going to be straight Nielsen's, or what factors are being considered here?
I think this has been a sea change that's happening with Jericho, because this huge organization, CBS, Les Moonves, has said, we don't know how to count these people, and we obviously miscounted all of these people. We were getting 3 million hits on our website a week when we were canceled. 3 million hits a week. So, and before that, we were getting 500,000 people streaming our episodes every week. So there are numbers. I think it's about them being able to then translate that and say, how do we make money off of that? Which, by the way, I think they're figuring out pretty quickly. So
yeah, they really are, and they're hiding it from all of us, and that's,
yeah,
going to be a giant strike.
Totally. So I think that's what's happened here with Jericho, is that CBS did a great job of cultivating an online audience, and then at the end of the day, they didn't have a way to count them because they didn't show up on Nielsen's. But there are other ways to count those numbers. And when our fans kept sending nuts and, you know, inundating CBS and BlackRock with nuts that they couldn't ignore, because and then the press picked up on it, and it was just this big story. The numbers they went to were the DVR numbers. Those are the numbers that turned the tide for us. And they realized how much of a lift we got from people who watched it afterwards. And so I think more and more, somebody told me that you know, when TV came along, they thought it was a great way to advertise radio. I think that, you know, I think that's true of the Internet. I think,
yeah,
more and more people, the 18 to 49 demo is on the net, and that's where we have to go.
We got to leave it there. Bill Lawrence is the creator and executive producer of Scrubs. Carol Barbee, the executive producer of Jericho. My thanks to them both for being on The Business. Bill, Carol, thanks again.
Thanks a lot.
And that's The Business. Matt Holzman produced and edited today's program with production assistance from Ray Guarna. Darby Maloney is the associate producer of our program. You can listen to this or any past program online anytime at kcrw.com/thebusiness. You can also podcast the show on KCRW's site or through iTunes. Our email address is thebusiness@kcrw.org. The Business is produced by KCRW Santa Monica and distributed by National Public Radio. I'm Claude Brodesser-Ackner. We'll see you next week on The Business.
KCRW offers more than 20 podcasts covering politics, news, music, arts, and culture. For more details, visit kcrw.com.